Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
What's up, everyone? Welcome back to District Baseball episode. I don't know why I keep trying to do the episodes. I don't know the episodes, but it is a great episode today of District Baseball. Congratulations, you just hit the best baseball source on the internet, on the interweb, and if you're listening, on the podcast form as well. We appreciate you. I am Nick. You can follow me on Twitter at the Coach Moose. He is Trey. You can follow him on Twitter at Reverse Two R2S in the show at District BSB. A lot to cover today in this great episode. But first, Trey, how are you doing today?
I hit the record button, Nick.
Hell
I did
yeah.
I managed to do it before we started and not in the middle of it like I did for last week's Nats episode. But a lot of good stuff to get into, baseball related. Also some not so great stuff off the field that we have to talk about. But
sounds like there's some up and some down.
There may be some ups and there may be some downs, which is why we're going to get into a three up, a three down recap right
now. Let's do it.
All right. So the first thing we got to cover is the Royals and Bobby Witt. They are our first up today. Bobby Witt has been, you know, kind of good. Let's just say kind of good. Actually, really good. He's at 4.2 F4 at this point in the season. That's through 65 games played. That is, if I don't have the math exactly, but that's probably about
that's
9
a lot.
More pace. That is very, very good. And his bat has been elite, but also his defense. He is maybe one of the best infielders in baseball. Him and Marcus Semien, I believe, are the top two in outs above average. And the Royals themselves, as a team, had an 8-run comeback the other night against the Mariners, which is, you know, not the team that's built to allow comebacks, but it happened crazy. It ended up as a 10-9 game with a walk-off. And there was even a moment where Salvador Perez got walked and just kind of got hyped for his boy coming up. Velasquez was the guy he ended up getting the walk off. And it was really cool moment. They seem like that Royals team, we've been talking about them. They got something, man. They got something. Them and the Guardians are a fun battle right now in that division. But moving on to another team in that division. Once again, it's the White Sox. Now, I said last week, kind of jokingly, that I was going to leave a spot open for the White Sox every week until they figure it out. And they're back again, but it's not really because of that. It's actually because of another embarrassing moment. Garrett Crochet, who is probably their best player right now.
Oh, without a doubt.
They tried to do an appeal where he stepped off through to first. They thought that Jarren Duran did not touch the base, and he overthrew the first baseman, and the runner came home to score. And by the way, he totally did not touch the base, and they had a total gripe. They would have won the appeal, but because he messed it up, the run scores. That's a weird baseball thing. Like, anyways, because appealing is just kind of strange. Like, if you missed the bag, maybe say you missed the bag. But whatever, it's a part of the game. And the overthrow, it's happened before, but it's just the fact that it happened to the White Sox right now keeps them in our down segment. But back to the positives. Nick, I got a list of players for you. Ready?
Let's do it.
Ezekiel Tovar, Aaron Judge, Teoscar Hernandez, Wilmer Flores, Adley Rutschman, Rafael Devers, Luis Torrens, Bobby Witt Jr., Ryan Mountcastle twice, Austin Hayes, Jake Rogers, Nolan Gorman, Ketel Marte, Juan Soto, Emmanuel Valdez, and Yordan Alvarez. What did they all do this week?
Could easily start for the Nationals right now.
Yes, that's definitely true. They also all hit multi-homer games.
Damn,
two homers in a game. Mountcastle twice in 1 week. That's pretty nuts. Actually, Judge might have done it twice this week, too. I keep forgetting to look at, Judge does it so often. It's not even
it's every night.
I know. It's like, it's not even crazy,
I
but
guess I
he might have
wasn't
done it
close.
twice.
I guess I wasn't close because if they're hitting home runs, they couldn't start for the Nationals because that's like a non-starter. To be
Yeah,
a Nats
that's
player, you're not allowed to hit home runs.
ground balls only. But yes, that was a lot of multi. I'm not, I don't have the numbers like if that was like the most in a week or nothing like that, but it was a
It's a
lot. It
lot.
seemed like a lot. And I just wanted to talk about that because there's a lot. And also the Mountcastle stuff, he's on a freaking tear right now, but there's a bunch of Orioles in here. Adley, Mountcastle twice, and Austin Hayes. They all did it this week. So pretty crazy stuff from the O's there. And then our second down this week is the Brewers. Unfortunately, some promising pitching candidates have hit the IL due to elbow injuries. DL Hall will require Tommy John surgery. He's going to be out for the year. And Robert Gasser, I think that's how you pronounce it, is getting a third opinion on his elbow
Not a second, a third.
injury. Yeah, so that's never a good thing. And he's already on the 15-day injured list, and surgery might be a thing for him as well. So once again, the pitching injuries just continue. This time it's with some younger guys, some guys with potential. That's never what you want to see. So that's a bummer for the Brewers. Already, yeah, their pitching depth is already tested, so they're losing even more. So we'll have to see how they recover from that. Back to the good, though. Our last up is the year of the splitter. This year is the first year in a while where splitter usage has eclipsed 3%. It might be the first year ever, but I know it's within the past 20 years because the splitter usage has been rising since the beginning of 2022. It was 2.2% last year of total pitches that being splitters. This year it's 3.2%. That's a full percent increase. And there's a lot of guys who have added splitters or increased their usage rate of the splitter. Cal Quantrill has the highest run value splitter in baseball, which is kind of crazy to think about. If you actually, his baseball reference page is really funny because he has one of the worst fastball run values in baseball. He is like essentially entirely splitter, slider, curveball based, and he's playing at Coors and it's working for him. He's done pretty well. Other notable splitter increases, Tanner Houck from 11 to 24%. He has probably been one of the best pitchers in baseball this season. Nate Eovaldi from 27 to 31%. And that was after an increase from 21% to 27% in 2022. And Bryce Miller just added a splitter this year and is already throwing it 17% of the time, and it's already one of the most valuable splitters in baseball. So be on the lookout. I think it has to do with tunneling, and it also has to do with guys coming over from different leagues and throwing splitters and teaching guys
That's what I was going to
different
say.
ways to throw it. Yeah, no, that's definitely been a huge increase the past few years. And finally, our last down is actually kind of an up for us because we're Nats fans and we are Braves haters. And the Braves are ass right now. And since May 1st, they're 28th in runs scored, 27th in WRC plus, 29th in on-base percentage. Now, they've had some injuries, but also just a lot of underperformance. They have two guys that are currently starters that are above an average WRC plus, that is Matt Olson and he who shall not be named. And then the rest of the team is just below average right now, hitting wise. So they're not scoring and they're not dominating like the Braves have been dominating the past few years. They'll probably still end up in the playoffs, but definitely something to look out for them. Because the offense has never been a problem, but it's currently a problem. I mean, maybe when they stop playing the Nats, the numbers will go up because for whatever reason, the Nats just completely destroy them. But that was three up, three down. And Nick, I have a question for you. It's about the White Sox. It doesn't really have anything to do with this play, but I'm sure you've seen that they have been shopping Luis Robert Jr. On the trade market. So first, should they be shopping him? And second, what do you think they can get for him right now?
Yeah, they should be shopping everyone. If
Fair enough.
anyone has value, they need to shop. Like the White Sox future right now is as bleak as any team in baseball. I mean, shit, even the Rockies have like Ezekiel Tovar and guys like that where you're like, okay, there's
And
promise there.
McMahon has been good for them too.
Maybe he's not, MVP candidate, but like he's a solid building block, and you just work up from there. I'm looking at the White Sox. We're gonna put Robert to the side because, like you just mentioned, they're shopping him. Like they don't really have any building blocks to really speak of. Like they are starting from as close to ground zero they might as well be an expansion team. They might be worse than an expansion team because they can't even just pick who they want. They're dealt the hand they have. So it's bleak, and they're not the only team to do this in recent history or have to do this in recent history. They're just, you know, they tried going all in, or their version of all in, a couple years ago. They didn't even get close, and they didn't do a good job selling off those pieces to try to, you know, make sure it didn't get so bad. Like, I think the Padres have a litany of issues over the past couple of years. Certainly, they're slightly better this year, but at least they had the foresight to sell Juan Soto, get something back for him, and then kind of maneuver the pieces around, trade for Dylan Cease and some other guys, and they're competitive. It's not exactly the same situation because the Padres are obviously in a much better situation than the White Sox were, but that's just one example of a team kind of looking ahead and doing what's best for the team. I think the Nationals are obviously, we're Nats fans, but it's a little bit of a different situation when you have Juan Soto and 3 years of control. So the White Sox should be trading everyone. As far as Luis Robert goes, I've heard, I don't know the legitimacy of these reports, but you know, I've heard they're going to be looking for the Juan Soto deal. Shit, I'm looking for the Juan Soto deal. Like, I mean, of course they're going to be looking for the Juan Soto deal. Doesn't mean you're going to get it. Luis Robert has like very tantalizing potential, but he's not at the level that Soto was. Yeah. I mean, no one is, and that's fine.
Exactly.
But it's more so like in terms of a trade return. I mean, Robert's been terrible this year. Let's just, you know, call it what it is. I know he was injured for like a month, so I'm not,
which doesn't help his value.
Yeah, anyways, I was gonna say I'm not trying to take anything away from him, but again, in terms of trade value, it hasn't really done it. In terms of like his value, or in terms of what he's provided, he hasn't done it as consistently as you would like if you're trading the farm for a building block. He had a great year last year. Great year. All-star, 38 home runs, you know, but his OPS is only 857, right? You expect it to hopefully increase as he gets older and more experienced, but you know, he's 26 this year. Hopefully his second half is good, but like we can almost, it's trending towards this being a lost year just with the injury and the slow start and the slow restart after the injury. So it's almost a lost year for him. So he's going to be age 27, you know, with what, 1 year of control after that. And you're kind of hoping and praying as opposed to acquiring a proven commodity at that point. Again, it's not saying he doesn't have value, but is this enough to completely restart a franchise the way the Soto deal did, or one of these other ones? No, he's not Mookie Betts. He's not Juan Soto. He's not one of these big hauls. Teams will be interested in, for sure, that there's plenty of teams around baseball that have competitive teams around baseball that have really desperate needs for outfielders and quality outfielders. It's kind of crazy right now, actually. So teams will be interested, and the White Sox should entertain those offers, but I don't think they're going to get anywhere close to the offers they would like to get for him.
I agree. Although I think there probably will be a team, if they do trade him this season, I bet there will be a team that overpays slightly because of his potential and the fact that he will have multiple years of control left.
But like an overpay, I mean, I would say right now a fair value would be what, two, you know, top five prospects in a team system, maybe, you know, one, if they're lower half in the top 100, one or two top 100 guys. So like an overpay is what, adding like a single A arm, you know? So it just depends on your definition, but I just don't think
it still won't be anywhere close to a Soto return. I don't know if that could have just been a rumor, but if they're really trying to get that, then that's obviously,
it wouldn't shock me if that baseball execs are notorious.
They should still get a decent return. I think that they should also be looking to shop Crochet and Fetty as well. To get
everything.
Like you said, like, what do they even have? I mean, I feel like they've got those three, but I mean, It's rough sledding. It's not a great roster. So it's kind of just maybe some relievers that are doing okay. I don't really think they have any, but
they're really bad.
It's rough. It would be smart for them to move whatever they can, trying to get something in their farm system, which is lacking as well.
Yeah. Just two quick points on some other things you talked about. Speaking of bad, the Braves offense is really bad. And when the Nats make the playoffs at the end of the year, they can thank the Braves because they're going to be like the Marlins last year that only got in because of the record against the Nats. The Nats are only going to get in because of the record against the Braves. So
yes, could possibly happen.
Yeah, very much crazy to think about. Appreciative of that. And then, the year of the splitter is very much a real thing. You talked about it, like guys like Kodai Senga, Yoan Duran, like they just came over wherever, were signed from, they were already throwing a splitter and it's just kind of spreading like wildfire. Last year, the last couple of years, it's been the sweeper. Now it's the splitter. Tunneling is very much a real thing, or a real reason for the rise of the splitter, but it's also changeups are hard to throw. That's kind of what it is.
And they're harder to throw hard as well. Right. I feel like it's easier for a guy to throw a splitter hard.
Yeah. So they need it doesn't exactly have the same movement, but it serves the same purpose of kind of tunneling the fastball and creating that speed difference, or at least movement difference from the fastball. The splitter is real, and you'll notice some of the best pitchers in baseball are adopting.
And Paul Skeens, I forgot. I didn't even mention Skeens just came in with his nasty splitter as well. So that's another guy that's got a wicked one.
Yep. A lot of great splitters around in baseball right now.
All right, let's move into our second topic, which is not as fun because it's serious stuff, off the field nonsense, and more gambling stuff within baseball. There were 5 players banned. 4 of them were banned for life. I mean, for a year, excuse me. Those players were A's pitcher Michael Kelly, pitchers Jay Groom and Andrew Salfrank from the Padres and Diamondbacks, infielder Jose Rodriguez from the Phillies, which these guys were all minor leaguers, but they were in those organizations. And then the big one was Marcano from the Pirates, who got banned for life. And it's not good. And the problem there's a lot of different angles to all of this. First of all, they should be banned. It makes sense. But the other argument is like, sports betting is so ingrained in modern sports culture. You know, it's all like everything's sponsored by a sports book now. So it's like the hypocrisy of MLB accepting those sponsorship deals, but also just completely banning players who gamble is kind of, there's a conversation to be had around it. But I think Marcano was the only guy that was banned for life. He wagered a lot more money than the other players. Poorly, might I add. He won 4.3% of his bets. So if you're doing better than that on your wagers, you're better than a baseball player at doing it, I guess. But it's not good. And then there was also, there's the Otani thing with Ipe, and his sentence got handed down is like 44 years in federal prison, which is, I'm just saying, if he was a fall guy, that would be pretty, be a pretty bad fall. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like with the conspiracy theories. I'll ask you your thoughts. What do you think about gambling as a whole in baseball and honestly in sports, because there was the NBA's issue with one of the Raptors players like betting against himself. So it seems to be,
there's and a lot of Calvin stuff Ridley. The NFL.
Yeah. I mean, it's all over the place. So what are your thoughts about that? And is this going to keep happening?
It definitely will. I'm not as familiar with the MLB's policy, but like the NFL, it's very vague, and that's what got some guys in trouble. It was like, this is just the NFL. It was like, you can't bet inside a team facility on NFL games, or like it was very, weird. So like in theory, you could be outside the team facility and bet on NFL games. And that's what guys got guys into trouble because they thought they were good, or, they just didn't care. But There certainly is some hypocrisy with baseball, or I mean sports in general, but we're talking about baseball. Baseball shows, so I'm going to stick to baseball. But there certainly is some hypocrisy. Money talks. Like they're going to continue to get those sponsorships, those agreements, and we're going to see that stupid FanDuel parlay that never hits. During
It
every
never
single
hits.
game, that's just never going to go away. But on the flip side, I get why they would have such a strong, punishment sentence, whatever, if a player does that, because it affects the integrity of the game. So it's weird to like both be a hypocrite but also be fair,
Yeah,
in some sense.
I'm with you because like, yeah, it's like they have you have to punish these guys. They can't be doing this. But at the same time, it's like they're also accepting all this money from those places. But that's not any different than in any other league or at any other. I mean, they've been doing the leagues aren't exactly perfect. Let's just be honest here. They do things that aren't that great. So, I agree. It's probably not going anywhere.
No, it's definitely not. There's too much
They
money.
yeah, they
There's
just
too
ha there
much
has
money.
to be a way. They have to keep this under wraps with these players. Like they have to catch it before it even starts because it just keeps coming out and then even more questions keep coming about certain players and certain other players. It's like, then the conspiracy theories start and you never know what's real and what's not. So it's they gotta stamp out the
Because like
I don't know, it's tough. It's definitely tough.
I guess they're in theory they're allowed to bet on other sports. Like
Yeah.
I don't think there's anything wrong with that. So it's like, is it just a blanket you can't bet on baseball? I guess they could, and that may be what it is for all I know. It's just being able to enforce it is going to be difficult, and I know they're catching some guys. It'll be the guys that really just don't care or don't think about hiding it that get caught. But like if someone really wanted to bet and get away with it, they pretty easily could. It's just because of the accessibility of betting nowadays. Like everyone
Yeah,
has
it's
an app.
everything's on your phone.
Shit, Fanatics has a betting app. Like it's just everywhere. So it's like it's hard because it's going to be so easily accessible. They're promoting it by I mean baseball. So it's a shit show, and it's going to
Yeah,
be
there
one of
you
those
go. That's
things
probably the best way
where,
to describe it.
so one big name, and this kind of ties back to the Ohtani thing, one big name is going to get caught for it, and they're really going to be faced with the decision. Because obviously, the Pete Rose thing, it was a little bit different because he was a player manager and directly betting on his games and obviously involved with that. But like one big player is going to be, found out to be betting, and that'll be really interesting to see. And with the Ohtani thing, again, we've kind of talked about it enough, but there's no way he didn't know. That's just kind of my two cents. Like maybe the extent was different, but I still think there's a way I think there's no way he didn't know, but that's just me.
Fair enough. I think yeah, everyone's gonna have their opinions because they're not good at telling you exactly what happened. They don't want
No.
people to
I mean,
know.
shit, that goes for literally everything in our lives.
Fair. Yeah,
Yeah,
I
we
mean,
get told
definitely.
what they want us to hear, so.
Yeah, that's just media in general. But yeah, that's definitely gonna be something to watch out for because it's a problem for sure. So hopefully that'll slow down. But let's talk about growing the game. Let's talk about good things again and move on to MLB London. The MLB London series, the third time I think they've done this. It was Phillies and Mets played in London for nearly 110,000 fans over a two-game series. That is a high number for baseball. And there were some good games. The second game was a 6-5 nail biter. They split the series 1-1. And there was a really cool double play at the end of that game with Luis Torrens. And the players after the game said that they really enjoyed it, but actually wanted it to be a bigger event. They wanted it to be longer. They wanted to have more teams. I probably because the travel turnaround for just two games is pretty tough. So I would assume that has something to do with it. But apparently the players and the coaches really enjoyed it. The fans had a good time. It's just another way to get baseball into another country, more so than it already is. obviously, since the WBC has taken place, I feel like, you know, international interest is as high as it's ever been. So absolutely a good idea to take advantage of that and put games on neutral sites in different countries. They've done it in Mexico. They've done it for the Dominican Republic. They've done it for the Seoul series at the beginning of this year. They wanted to do one in Paris, I read, but that didn't quite come through. But just even thinking about doing a baseball series in France, where there basically is none, mm-hmm. you know, wasn't, there probably is a little following now, but that's just a cool idea. So yeah, it's just growing the game. There's more international players in baseball now than ever. And it's just really cool. I love the fact that they're going to different places, and I want to see even more of it. I want to see Canada. I want to see anywhere they can think of, honestly, that they haven't been to in a while, or ever. So
yep.
Taiwan would be another good one. So yeah, just really, it was just an awesome event. Bryce Harper obviously did the power slide. Mm-hmm. So it's cool. It's that actually got some pretty good media coverage in England. So like it was a thing over there. So really cool stuff. And I had a really fun time watching it.
Yeah, it's a great idea. I'm shocked, like, this is year three of doing it. I'm shocked it hasn't grown to other areas. Not that there's anything wrong with London, but you know, like the NFL, they started in Mexico City, or sorry, started in London, then they expanded in Mexico City. Now they're going to Brazil, they're Germany, they're, you know, they're going national or international, gosh, sorry. And it seems like baseball is starting to realize they have something here. I love the idea of making it some sort of tournament. I think the mm-hmm. NBA in-season tournament's a little stupid, but you could play off that idea and maybe do it like, I don't know if you want to do divisions, but maybe you take like last year's top four, you know, the ALCS, the NLCS, and send them to London for a little, you know, round robin kind of tournament or event thing. Mm-hmm. And so that way you're sending, yeah, granted, teams change so much year to year, but you're sending the best four teams from the year prior to help grow the game internationally. Just kind of makes sense that way. But I love the idea of making it a bigger event and making it some sort of tournament or event would kind of
prize pool like the NBA's, like, would at least incentivize the players to I mean, it's obviously they're incentivized enough, they're regular season games and they count, but you know, it can bring that playoff atmosphere.
Yeah.
And which it honestly, it was with the crowds, it was pretty close, but they could take it to another level. And I think that they will, because the players are definitely into these ideas.
Growing businesses and finance professionals, you need Bill Spend and Expense, the free to use spend management software. It's powered by the Bill Divvy corporate card, which helps growing companies scale with credit lines of $500 to $15 million, automated expense reports, and as many virtual cards as you need. For a limited time, get $500 when you get started with Bill Spend and Expense. Request a demo at bill.com/get500. Terms and conditions apply. Advertised credit ranges are not guaranteed and are determined at approval. Card issued by Cross River Bank, member FDIC.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.
Yeah, yeah, they really are. And nobody's better at it than Bryce. Bryce loves to, he just knows how to, like, do the promotion side. Yeah,
you could use the P word if you're annoying, but realistically, he's just a good ambassador for the game.
He is. There's nothing wrong with that. Like, baseball's so boring in terms of the personality It's like, it's okay.
Let them have some fun. Let them embrace another.
Let the kids play. You know, granted, Bryce isn't a kid anymore, but it was kind of that same movement. But yeah.
Really good stuff, MLB London. Looking forward to more there as well. Now we're moving into a very interesting topic, I think, because first of all, let me say I got this idea from an article, so I'm not going to be plagiarizing anyone. John Becker wrote this article for Fangraphs. It's called Top of the Order. Could this be the temporary end of Rays magic? The Rays are in a weird spot because they're not that great right now. They're under 500. They are in a brutal division. And league, honestly, the American League is just better than National League right now. But the AL East obviously is the bigger issue. They've got three teams that are better than them. So you already are kind of on the outside looking in for a wild card spot just based on your division. They've got a lot of players that are not locked up for very long. Is a sell-off imminent for the Rays? I think it might be in a way. But let me ask you, who do you think that they're going to move if they do end up going to sell this year?
I would think Arozarena's near
there. Yeah, that would be my first pick.
Of that list.
Yeah.
I know he's had obviously some iconic moments there, but in terms of what you could get for those guys, I think he would probably net the biggest return of anyone they have or would be willing to move. I know they have like some impending free agents like Brandon Lau, who a team might want to take flyer on. Isaac Paredes, like I like him, but realistically, how much of a return are you going to get? So it's just weighing that, you know, that value versus what they bring versus what they can bring in return. But I would think Randy's probably at the top of the list, and that honestly might be all they do because they'll be getting a plethora of pitchers back next year, just in terms of health. So they might not want to tear it down completely, but selling at the deadline is certainly in play for them, especially with how strong of a division they're in.
Yeah, I think a reload is probably...
Oh, here we go with the R words.
The R words, yeah. The reload or a rebuild. I think this is a reload type of situation because, you know, their strength has always been their pitching depth. And that, for the first time, has been tested to the point where they don't really have much right now. In the farm system, they've got some guys that are good. Like, they've got, obviously, Caminero, who's a great position player. But pitching-wise, you know, these guys aren't really performing like they have in previous years, like the depth guys that you've never heard of. So what I'm thinking is that, yes, I think Randy gets moved. I think potentially they might move pitchers to get pitchers, if that makes sense, because they have guys that are only on 1 year deals or have deals that are ending after 2025 that they might move to try and get players with, you know, 6 years of control, because that's how the Rays tend to operate.
Yep.
But yeah, so they have the most interesting guy for me is Paredes right now, because the Rays just hate paying people and they like to trade guys when they start making too much money. And that's kind of what we're saying about Randy. He's making $8 million this year. That's like,
that's way too much
for the Rays, but yeah. You know, not for other teams. But Paredes just started arbitration. He's in his first year of ARB, and he's already making $3.4 million this year. And he's by far the best player on the team so far this season. So he's going to get quite a pay bump in his arbitration years. And he is eligible for arbitration 4, which not many players are. There is no way he gets to ARB 4 before getting moved by the Rays.
Yeah.
But I don't even know if he's going to get to next year, because they do not want to pay anybody the amount of money that he's going to be requiring for his next arbitration year, just based on how well he's played so far this year. And also ARB is, you know, kind of based on where dudes start. So it'll just be really interesting to see what the Rays do, because they have they have options, but they also operate in a very weird way that other teams do not follow. So it'll be intriguing, to say the least.
Yeah, the Rays are the exception to every rule
yeah, it seems like
you know they operate by the beat of their own drum, and you kind of respect them for it. But this is kind of a new one for them. We'll have to see what they decide to do. We saw them trade Blake Snell way early, and then we saw them, granted, hindsight's 2020, but we saw them extend Wander Franco very early. So it'll be very interesting to see how they kind of proceed through this this kind of odd time in the recent 10-15 years of the franchise. All right, last segment, I wanted to look at all of the teams. There's 8 teams that hired a new manager this year. Real quick, rapid fire, I'll say where they're at in the standings, and you're going to tell me good hire, too soon, or bad hire. Ready?
Okay, got it.
All right, ready. Angels moved on from Phil Nevin. They hired Ron Washington. They are last in the division, but it's kind of to be expected, or at least, somewhere around there. 25-40 right now. Is Ron Washington good hire, bad hire, too soon?
I'll go too soon, although he's had some controversies with some bunting nonsense. Yeah. I'll go too soon, though, because this roster just is not. I mean, I don't know what manager's going to be able to do with this roster right now, especially with the injuries.
Yeah.
So we'll go too soon on him.
I agree. All right. The Astros, Dusty Baker retired, and they kind of had a sort of coach in waiting. A lot of teams would have liked to hire him. Joe Espada. The Astros not off to the greatest of starts, 30-36, third in the division, but they're only 6.5 out, obviously, mid-June. Good hire, bad hire, too soon.
Once again, going too soon here, but it's leaning towards, I don't know, because they're still struggling in certain ways. I thought they'd get over it by now. But it's still too early. As far as I'm concerned, this team has to be out of the playoffs for me to consider them dead. So
yeah,
it's probably going to be waits to see until the end of the year for him.
I'm going to say too soon just because I was high on him initially, but it's trending towards bad hire. Brewers let go of Craig Counsell to a division rival for nothing. They hired bench coach Pat Murphy. It seems like they didn't miss a beat, although they are now injury. Good hire, bad hire, too soon?
I'm going to have to go good hire here.
I agree.
I did not expect it at the beginning of the year. In fact, they kind of flip-flopped from what I was thinking. So I'll have to go with good hire. He's maintained exactly what they've been doing the last few years with probably less. So yeah, good job, Pat Murphy.
Yeah, I was going to say the Brewers probably or seemingly knew what they had. Not that they didn't like Craig Counsell, but they thought they could continue their success with their bench coach, and it worked pretty seamlessly. So good hire. All right, the next team, the aforementioned Cubs, who stole Craig Counsell from their division rival Brewers. The Cubs are kind of a unique team, we'll put it that way. A lot of expectations, but they weren't a playoff team last year, could have been a playoff team last year, but also didn't really do a ton in the offseason. Certainly not the start Counsell would have hoped, 32-34, second place in the division. But, we're still early. A lot of baseball left to be played. Craig Counsell, good hire, bad hire, too soon?
Still too soon, because we've also discussed that the Cubs they stayed very stagnant in the offseason. Yep. So this is kind of where they were at this point last year. They weren't a playoff team until they actually hit a bigger run towards the middle and the end of summer. Before their collapse in September. So this isn't really any different than last year. I think they were hoping that somehow the manager could produce, 5-10 more wins.
Right.
And that's kind of asking a lot when you don't give them any help. So I'll say too soon, although there is some worry in the back of my mind with that. But it's more on the roster right now, I think.
Yeah, so I agree. This is actually the toughest one for me, and it's kind of silly because Craig Counsell is a great manager. But part of me wants to say bad hire because I don't think David Ross was a bad manager. So it was more like the decision, not necessarily who they got.
David Ross will be a manager somewhere else.
Yeah.
And it won't be that long. It'll be soon.
I think the problem with David Ross is there just wasn't enough degree of separation between the team he played on versus the team he was now coaching. Like, it was basically just like, oh, your boy
player
that
manager.
You're friends with gets promoted and now he's your boss and you're just like, what the fuck? Yeah, like that's just so it just maybe it didn't work for that respect.
Probably some weird vibes.
Sure. But like you just kind of let it go on and let him get comfortable and build. Again, the roster wasn't all that great last year and they missed the playoffs by one game. Mm-hmm. Then again, Craig Council becomes available. It's like, what are you going to do? Not go get him? So I will say too soon, just because it's like, if it was just Council in a vacuum, I would say good hire. If it was just letting go of David Ross, just because, I would say bad hire. So I'll say too soon, but I'm very much down the middle on that one.
Yeah, we'll have to come back in a couple months and see where they're at, because these teams are all in interesting spots right now, I feel like. I mean, most of them, I would say. Maybe the Angels are probably the only one that are, like, super out of it.
Yep.
But all these guys, you know, if these are new hires, but, I mean, the turnover rate in sports coaching is pretty quick. So
yep.
If there's underperformance, don't you get can a lot see of someone get axed. So yep. We'll see.
Absolutely.
Who'd you want to go with next?
Next is the San Francisco Giants. Speaking of teams that, you know, just poached a manager from someone else in their division, the Giants were just gifted Bob Melvin after a disappointing year in San Diego. The Giants, obviously, they had kind of a busy offseason, kind of paying guys no one wanted to pay. You know, Solaire, Snell, and Chapman. They are 32 and 34, dealt with some injuries, but they are still in the thick of it. The NL wildcard race is completely wide open. No one is out of it unless you're really the Marlins. but the Giants, what do you think? Good hire, bad hire, too soon for Bob Melvin?
I mean, I want to go good hire still, because I still believe in this hire. I still think... Yeah. This is a good spot. They haven't performed quite yet, and it's honestly been mostly the signings in the offseason that haven't done it. Solaire has been bad. Snell has been bad. Chapman has been okay. I still think this is a good hire. I'll go too soon for now, but I feel like they're going to have a good run in the summer and really establish themselves as a wild card spot, a wild card team.
Yeah,
for the playoffs. But right now, I'll keep it at too soon.
I'm going to say good hire.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
I think the Giants are, they're not exploiting. It's not, they're taking advantage of a solid strategy in hiring managers that didn't work out elsewhere. Right, maybe like didn't have a ton of success, but maybe have learned from that experience. Gabe Kapler, granted, Gabe Kapler is now posting thirst traps on TikTok. So
I saw that. Dude,
very,
what?
Very bizarre. But like Gabe Kapler, obviously not the best tenure in Philly, came to San Fran. I understand, you know, most of his years were disappointing, but he won NL Manager of the Year with them in 107 games with a roster that was not very good. Right. So now they're trying that again. But Bob Melvin is sort of in the Craig Council conversation where like manager of the year, one of the best managers in the game, just didn't work in San Diego. But I've been on this train for a long time. I think there's just more issues in San Diego that go beyond just the manager. The manager is obviously the scapegoat, but I mean, that team should have performed way better than they did last year. And I don't think that was Bob Melvin's fault, but I do think the Giants are very, very smart to go get Bob Melvin and, you know, just give him a chance. But also to the Council argument, they also gave him support with Solaire, Chapman, Snell. They just haven't been healthy. Solaire missed a month. Snell has been back and forth. Granted, that was kind of a late signing. He didn't get a spring training, so he's not the typical Blake Snell, honestly. But he's not been your typical Blake Snell that you would expect. So I'm going to still say good hire until I'm like without a doubt proven otherwise.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you there, honestly, because I'm still leaning towards good.
Yeah. Next one is probably, I'm just going to tip my hand here, the best hire on this list, the Guardians.
There's no question, I don't think.
The Guardians hire Stephen Vogt. I absolutely love this trend of hiring former catchers. It kind of goes to my David Ross thing. But I think, you know, generally speaking, catchers are the most knowledgeable about the game in terms of players on the field. They just kind of have to be in terms of the position they play. Yeah.
And they understand the grind more than anyone.
Right. So I really like this. Obviously, stepping into the shoes of Terry Francona is not an easy thing to do. I thought Terry Francona was the best manager in the game. If he went and coached any team in baseball, I would instantly say he's the best manager in the game, regardless of that team's record. So for Steven Vogt to come in, first-time manager, no managerial experience, not even a bench coach, not a third base coach, none of that, just coming in a year after he retired and doing what he is doing with, like, I think we all thought the Guardians were like a decent team. Like, it wasn't the worst opening, but we certainly didn't expect them to perform the way they have been. And I think you have to give Steven Vogt a lot of credit. So I will, without a doubt, say good hire.
Yeah, that's a, I don't think it's a question. He's been the best hire, absolutely, from this past offseason so far. It's kind of the inverse of Ross. You know, he retired from the A's and then went and coached a different team, although I know he played in Cleveland before, but not, it wasn't that fresh. Also,
there was degree separation.
There was, it's also different because Ross was a World Series champ, and like, he, I don't know, maybe that kind of gave, I don't know, you know, it's different. I don't really know exactly, I can't pinpoint it, but anyways, the record speaks for itself, I think.
Yeah, with that out.
So they're top of the division. Even if they, I mean, I don't think they'll even sustain this pace still, but even if they don't, this is still a W hire because this roster wasn't supposed to be this good. He's getting a lot out of guys that haven't been, you know, have been kind of role players before. So I think this is a W of a hire.
Yeah, I agree. All right, the next one, the Mets.
Hire I'll start.
Carlos Mendoza.
After I hate this guy.
Buck Showalter. I'm right there with you. This is, I think this is the worst manager in baseball. And I'm a Nats fan.
Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah. I don't like him. I don't like anything he says. It makes
That's more so what it is for me. It's like the way he's handled some of these things. Like, the Mets roster is not very strong. I know everyone has the payroll in mind, but it's a lot of bad contracts and a lot of contracts that are actually no longer on the team. You know, they ate all of Scherzer and Verlander's money to buy prospects. But like, it still counts against their payroll, but they're not getting that money invested into the team or into the major league roster. So it's not necessarily the record. I expected the Mets to be bad. It's just the way he's handled it. It looks like he's in way over his head. He has no idea what he's doing. And yeah, I don't like the Mets, but I feel fairly unbiased in saying this as well. Like, I just think he's a bad manager. It happens. Like, you know, it's not saying he's a bad guy or anything. I just don't think he's a good manager.
Yeah, his decision-making is baffling. I'm not going to, again, we're not going to sit here and say this Mets roster is amazing, but at the same time, you got to try and put your players in positions to be successful. Batting Jeff McNeil fourth for like the first month of the year is not going to do that. Letting a lefty face Ketel Marte in the top of the ninth when everybody in the universe knows that his splits are extremely valuable against left-handed pitching and way worse against lefties. He had the go-ahead home run, by the way. That was honestly, that specific moment was like, okay, I'm done with this guy. Because like, everybody in baseball knows Ketel Marte is crushing lefties right now. You do not let a lefty face him right now, especially in the ninth. And he let him do it, and they lost. His bullpen management is poor. When Diaz,
to say the least.
When Edwin Diaz moved out of the ninth spot, he pitched one inning in the seventh inning, and was like, okay, it like wasn't even that dominant. They moved him right back into the ninth spot and he blew it. It's like, you got to know, you got to put your players in the best position to succeed and let it go. When you put them in a bad position, you already lost. There's no chance that's going to be good. So his decision make, I'm sure Mets fans are already over the guy. But yeah. And then his post game stuff is always annoying. Like, he's always, He doesn't know how to take accountability for poor managerial decisions. I think that's one of the most important things for a manager to do, is to know when it's their fault.
Hear that, David Martinez?
Yeah. And listen, it's not an enviable position to be thrown into the Mets as a new manager. But at the end of the day, he took the role. So this is how it goes. And you gotta expect that there's gonna be some tough questions, and you can't get defensive whenever you get one. So he's got a long way to go to earn my trust if I was a Mets fan. I'm glad that I'm not, so I don't have to deal with this guy. I mean, we have Martinez, so it's not like we got our own problems, but I'd rather have him than Mendoza.
Yeah, I would agree. All right, the last one is the San Diego Padres. As we mentioned before, they let Bob Melvin go after a one-year trial. Didn't really work. The team looks a lot different, a lot of shuffling. Let Blake Snell go, trade away Juan Soto. Bring in Mike Schilt, who was an advisor for the team for 2 years, but previously he was coaching with the Cardinals for, I believe, 3 years, and won actually manager of the year with them as well. He was, I'm sure still is, like the only manager in baseball not to ever play a game in the majors. So kind of a unique role for him. But the Padres, you know, it kind of depends on your expectations of them coming into the season. But right now, 34, 35, 8 games back of the Dodgers for first place in the NL West. Mike Schilt, good hire, bad hire?
I'm leaning towards good here, because the record, you know, it's not that great. They're about 500, but they probably lost players. I mean, they got Cease, but they probably lost more than they got this offseason.
Yeah, value-wise, yeah.
And they've maintained. So I can't say it's bad. But because, yeah, so they, you know, you lose a superstar like Juan Soto and you maintain your record, then your manager might be doing something right. There's still a long way to go, and there's still a lot of egos on this team. And, you know, Manny Machado, for example, hasn't been that great. So you never know. Will it all explode in the clubhouse? I don't know. I thought it was weird when the Cardinals fired him, because I mean, I'm pretty sure I've mentioned it, but I don't like Ali Marmol at all.
No.
And he was like kind of doing pretty good with like what he had. I mean, they were making the playoffs with a roster that was kind of aging and had many flaws, but he still managed to get them in there. So I thought that was kind of weird. So I'm sort of liking this hire for the Padres right now. It's definitely tentative, but for now I'm saying this is a good hire.
Yeah, I like this hire. I didn't think I would for what it was worth, but I've been convinced. So I talked about like my just suspicions with the issues in the Padres organization running deep. And I think Mike Schilt strikes me as a more of a no-nonsense guy. Not that Bob Melvin wasn't, but he just, like, I remember hearing clips of him, you know, with the Cardinals and things like that. Older guy, just strikes me as a no-nonsense guy. And you talked about the egos on the team. You know, Machado, obviously a long rap sheet of instances, we'll call it that. Fernando Tatis, superstar, a lot of off-the-field stuff. Not necessarily all that bad. I mean, I guess he got popped for PEDs technically, but, you know, not like he's a bad person, but, you know, crashing his motorcycle and just not being the most professional, you know, superstar or face of the franchise that you would like, and not to mention all of the hype around Slam Diego and all this stuff. You know, they kind of needed someone with a firm hand at the helm, and it seems like Mike Schilt is at least a step in the right direction. So I'm actually going to say good hire for their
I feel like Melvin fits San Francisco better and Schilt fits San Diego better. Like,
yeah,
it
I
just
agree.
The fits there are better now. So I'm with you on that one.
Yep. So that's kind of just a quick glance at the 8 new managers around baseball. Obviously, time will tell. The second half of the season could completely paint a different picture. But it was just kind of fun, quick experiment to see what these new teams are, or what these teams are doing with their new managers and how they're performing through the first, you know, 40% of the season or so.
Yeah, I think that's it for today, though. We got through our topics. I think that you know, I think the most important thing this week was MLB London. Again,
I
just want to reiterate, the expansion of the game is so important, and it's been happening more so in the past, you know, 5 years, and I just love to see that. It's my favorite thing. And I love to see that the teams, the Asian leagues, starting to send more players over as well. We've seen the NPB and the KBO send players. I think I saw a rumor, I don't know if this is true, just one more tangent, that Roki Sasaki is looking to get posted next year, and I know that there's rules about that, so I'm not sure how that's going to be possible, but I'd love to see it. That would just be another superstar from Japan. So
the way I understand it is he can be posted, but his earning power is significantly less.
Okay.
So it's more just like, yeah, if he wants to, he can, but he's not going to make much money, which seemingly would be the primary factor into wanting to be posted. So we'll see.
So yeah, sounds like maybe it's a bet on himself type deal if he does do that. So that would be very cool.
Because you'll make more money up front, but you're hitting free agency in America 1 year earlier than you would if you just waited to be posted according to the normal timeline. So yeah, it is kind of a bet on yourself type thing.
Yep.
Which goes back to our gambling. I'm just kidding.
plus 110,000 odds. Sasaki will. Right, anyways, that'll be the end of the episode, though. Follow us on Twitter at DistrictBSB. Follow us on TikTok at District Nationals. Follow me at Reverse2RStresses. Follow Nick at The Coach Moose. And make sure to hit like, subscribe, all that good stuff on the YouTube channel if you're watching. And Nick, let's go baseball.
Let's go baseball.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.